The World Inside an Atom, from the Book of Knowledge, edited by Arthur Mee and Holland Thompson, Ph.D. We have learned something of the wonderful little bits of electricity called electrons that fly about in the atoms, and we may now think for a minute or two about the size of these. They are so small that we can only give ourselves some faint idea of their size by a comparison. Evidently, we must begin by trying to get some idea of the size of the ordinary atoms of matter. That great genius, Lord Kelvin, the greatest student of these subjects since Newton, devoted some time and trouble to this subject. His opinion was expressed in some such way as this. A drop of water, we know, is made up of molecules of water, each of them consisting of three atoms. Doubtless, an oxygen atom is much bigger than a hydrogen atom, but in the question we are talking about, we need not trouble about that. Let us try to suppose, then, that a single drop of water were magnified so enormously as to be the size of the Earth. Then the atoms that make it up would appear probably somewhere between the size of a small shot and a tennis ball. Perhaps it might help us a little to look at the matter in the opposite direction. Imagine this great Earth of ours, 25,000 miles round, made of, let us say, one great heap of marbles. And then think of that whole Earth shrinking down into the size of a drop of water, and try to imagine how small those marbles would have to be. Yet that would be something like the size of the actual atoms in an actual drop of water. Well, when Lord Kelvin made this calculation, which was not a matter of mere guessing, but depended upon many things, such as the changes in color of a soap bubble as it gets thinner, he was thinking of atoms as the simplest and smallest possible units of matter. But now we are to think of atoms as themselves made of things which are smaller still, and the question is, how much smaller? Let us imagine that we could take a single atom of average size and make it as large as some great hall or church. I mean a very large hall or a cathedral, rather than an ordinary church. Now, according to the old view, an atom magnified like that would look like one great simple solid crystal, sharply defined, nowhere worn, having no parts and incapable of being divided up. But, according to the new view, the atom would be much more like a great hall, for there would be plenty of space in it that was not filled. It would be roomy, so to say. But in it there would be contained various things which made it up. These would be flying about inside it, probably round and round, in a quite orderly way, somewhat as the planets fly around the sun in the solar system. And the size of these things, which we have learned to call electrons, would be about the size of a period on this page, if the atom were magnified to be the size of a large hall. Now, the size of a period, compared with the size of a great hall, is, of course, the tiniest of tiny things, and yet we have learned that the atom is really so small that if a drop of water were magnified to the size of the whole Earth, the atoms would only be about the size of marbles. This is the best that we can do in order to give us some little idea of the tiny size of an electron. And we may remind ourselves here that so far as all the evidence goes, this size is a constant, fixed, and universal thing true of all electrons, whatever atom they come from, and whether that atom be found on Earth or in the sun or anywhere else. These ideas are so big, though the things with which they deal are so small, that we can scarcely realize them. Let us then just look at the period which ended the last sentence, and try to see with the mind's eye what it is really made of. It is a small and neat round blot of black ink on the page. This ink is made of various things, some put in to make it sticky, some put in to make it black, and so on. But we may describe it as a solution of certain salts of the wonderful metal iron, about which we have read something already. It is one of the peculiarities of the salts of iron that they are nearly all richly colored. The amount of salt in the blot of ink we call a full stop is not very much, but it must contain certainly millions of atoms, some of them of iron and others of the various elements making up the particular salts of iron and other things in the ink. If as many more atoms were added to the blot as there are human beings on the whole Earth, say 1,600 million, even that number would not nearly be sufficient to make the blot look any larger to our eyes. Yet, each of those atoms, tiny though it must be, is itself, compared with the things in it, a great roomy space in which they fly about. And the size of those things or electrons compared with it is like the size of a period compared with a great hall. These ways of trying to express the size of electrons are much more valuable than we might think. It is not merely that they give us some little idea of what the sizes really are. They do far more than that. We can use these pictures to give us some idea of what the structure of the atom really is. We said that if the atom were the size of a great hall, the electrons would fly about in it, perhaps rather like the Earth and the other planets flying around the Sun. Now, some of the greatest thinkers of the present day have made us see that this is something more than a mere fancy picture. They are deliberately asking us to think of the atom as if it were a sort of solar system. The solar system we know is roomy. I mean that, though there are several planets in it, yet there is abundance of room between them. Even at times when the Earth is nearest to her nearest neighbor, Mars, there are tens of millions of miles between them. Another way of saying this would be that, compared with the size of the whole solar system, the planets, which help to make it up, are very tiny, so that there is abundance of room between them. Now, the same is true of the electrons and the atom. Though the atom itself is so tiny, yet the electrons are so much tinier that, compared with their own size, there is as much room between them as they circle around within the atom as there is between the planets as they circle within the solar system. For there is every reason to believe that the electrons do move round within the atom. We have no right to say that they move round in regular circles nor in regular ellipses, as the planets do in the solar system, but we do know for certain that they are always moving, and that they move in a regular, orderly, systematic way. We are sure, indeed, that just as we may speak of a solar system, so we must now speak of an atomic system, and every atom is an atomic system. We shall begin to see how great this discovery is if we remember that for thousands of years we have been told that we should look upon matter as gross, brute, dead, inert, passive, inactive. We are now learning that the atoms making up matter, which we were told is inert and dead, are the scene of tremendous forces of ceaseless and wonderful activity, not one whit less wonderful than the solar system itself, for wonderfulness is not a matter of size. Now, what is it that keeps the solar system together and makes a system of it? We know very well that it is the attraction of the Sun. The system has a center from which it is controlled and by which it is kept in order. If the Sun were to vanish, all the planets, instead of flying around it, would begin to move in straight lines, and soon there would be no system at all, nor anything like it. Even if the Sun were only to lose its power of attraction, the planets would immediately fly away, and there would be an end of the solar system. Now let us consider the case of the atom. The electrons in it are moving with great speed and power. They are all of the same kind, and a notable fact about them is that their tendency is not to attract, but to repel each other. An electron tends to push away, and to be pushed away from, any other electron. Yet large numbers of these little bodies exist in the atom, though the tendency of each is to fly away from the others. Further than this, they are in motion, and the tendency of everything which is in motion is to go on moving in a straight line forever. Yet, at any given time, most of them remain within the atomic system, just as the Earth remains within the solar system. It is the central attraction of the Sun which prevents the Earth from flying away. Is the central attraction of the Sun which prevents the Earth from flying away so powerful that the electrons can all keep together even though their tendency is to repel each other? There is no doubt as to this. Just as the solar system would be impossible without the sun, so the existence of an atom would be impossible without the presence of some force within it, which held together and controlled all the electrons that go to compose it. And here we come upon something new and must use two new words. We say, though in so saying we must not fancy that we fully understand what we are talking about, that electricity may exist in two kinds. We are not here talking about electric waves at all. They are utterly different, and someday when we have more sense, they will have a special name. These two kinds are contrasted with each other, and for convenience we call one kind positive and the other negative. Now, the reason for distinguishing these two kinds and for giving them these names lies in their relation to each other. Positive and negative electricity attract each other, but two negative electricities or two positive electricities will repel each other. Now, all the electrons we have been talking about, these tiny but wonderful things which fly about in the atomic system as the planets do in the solar system, are of the kind called negative. They are often described as negative electrons. Similar kinds of electricity repel each other, and when we find a number of electric particles or atoms, all negative, living together in the same atom, we may be quite certain that, if only we could find it, there must be some positive electricity in the atom, which is holding them all together. And that is the case. We must think of the atom as if it had in the center a sun made of positive electricity, the bond which holds the atom together, and then around this, within its sphere of influence, as we say, there are a number of electrons or particles of negative electricity in ceaseless movement within the atom, but controlled by the core or center of positive electricity. This, then, is the system that makes the atom, and the parallel between the atom and the solar system is not only beautiful and interesting, but there is a general agreement that it is also the most helpful and instructive way of looking at the atom that we can imagine at present. Of course, we must ask ourselves what these positive and negative electricities that we talk about really are, and that is the question of questions for this branch of science today. About positive electricity, we know scarcely anything, but in various ways it has been possible, especially during the last 8 years, to learn a great deal about negative electricity. We know that the electrons move out of the atom at a rate of about 30,000 miles a second, which means that it moves so fast it could travel around the Earth in a single moment. We know that because they are electric, they put the air around them into a peculiar electric state. We can weigh them, in a sense, and we can study the force with which they repel each other. We are also beginning to get some notion of the numbers of them that exist in atoms of various kinds, comparatively few in a small atom, like that of hydrogen, but vastly larger numbers in a big atom, like that of radium. We shall not quote here the numbers that have been suggested, but may merely say that they run to several hundreds in the case of the hydrogen atom, and tens of thousands in the case of atoms like those of mercury or radium. This subject, however, is being worked at just now, and it will be wiser if we are not too sure at present. It is especially interesting to learn that the study of electrons helps us to understand why it is that certain kinds of atoms exist and not other kinds, why there are about 80 elements and not, say, 80,000, why the elements run in groups, why iodine is like fluorine in many respects, though they are so different than others, and so on. 30 years ago, there was nothing to be said except simply that there were so many elements with such and such properties. No one could say why there should be these elements and not others, nor why oxygen should have the properties of oxygen and gold the properties of gold. These are great questions which we must be able to answer if ever we are to understand fully the story of the Earth. And they are now beginning to be answered by the new discoveries regarding the nature of matter. 30 years ago, we thought that in finding the atom, we had finished. Now we see that in finding the atom, we have only begun. But we must not leave this part of our story without trying to understand what it really means, which is that big and little are only ways of talking and really do not mean very much. Anything that is bigger than ourselves, we call big, and anything that is smaller, we call small. Or anything that we can see without trouble, we call big, and anything too small to see with our unaided eyes, we call small. But this is making us and our eyes the measure of all things, and we have no right to do that. Really, there are worlds within worlds. There is the familiar world that we see around us. The earth is in the middle of it, as we think, and everything that is in the sky goes around it. But really, nothing goes around it but the little moon, and our world is only a part of a system with the sun as its center. This solar system, then, is another world outside our world. But the solar system itself is only a part of the world of stars. Or, instead of looking outwards, look inwards. We have invented an instrument called the microscope and have found a world of little living things which no one had dreamed of, yet quite as lively and real, as wonderful a world as the one we all know. Then, by the aid of chemistry, we can pierce to a world smaller still, just as wonderful. We pick up the bodies of living things, and water, and stones, and dust, and we find them all made of atoms. We thought that that was the smallest world that could be. But each atom is a world of its own. We actually know less about the wonders of the world or system we called an atom, about its balance and history and structure, than we do about the world or system we call the solar system. We think that we have found in electricity the real first stuff out of which matter is made. But electricity is perhaps only a part of a still deeper world, the world of ether, which lies beyond. Yet some people say that when science begins to dissect and analyze nature, all the wonder and beauty of things is destroyed. How little they know. The End. Read by Leonides. For Lit2Go on the web at fcit.usf.edu.